Council is in session. To state your case, call 521-TALK, 521-8255.
Okay, kids, you're about to hear Dr. Barry Dworkin in a way that you've probably never heard him before, okay? He does Sunday House Call. He comes on at 4 o'clock with Rob Snow every Wednesday afternoon on the Drive Home Show, okay, the afternoon show. And he's always taking calls, you know, giving you medical advice and talking about your symptoms, giving you a little bit more light, you know, on what could be happening in your body, okay? But as some of you know, actually, I'd probably say as a lot of you know, because you're CFRA listeners and your chances are you're much more informed than your average person on the street. We know that there have been drastic cuts that have been initiated by the McGuinty government. And I don't think everybody understands the implications of what it's going to mean to those of us that have family doctors. And I'm one of those guys that's fortunate enough to have one. How many in the Ottawa area, Barry, do not have family doctors, approximately?
There are always people asking for their family members because of retirements and such. But I would say in the Ottawa area, we know that there's at least 900,000 to maybe a million people in Ontario that still don't have.
Right.
So if you look at Ottawa, you're probably still looking at, you know, maybe 50 to 100,000 people at
least. Yeah, I've heard at least 35,000, okay? Yeah. And that's a, you know, I mean, those of you that family doctors, boy, I hope you don't take it for granted because you are very blessed and fortunate people. But even those of us that have family doctors, with the cutbacks that McGuinty is talking about, there's a very, very good chance, and this is not hyperbole, and Barry's going to give you the facts tonight. Dr. Dworkin's going to give you the facts. There's a very good chance you're going to lose your family doctor, even if you've had him for generations, okay? That's the implications. And when I said he's on the show tonight in a very different capacity than what he is on Wednesday afternoons and Sundays, we are not taking medical questions tonight, okay? Barry is gonna inform us as to, you know, what is being cut back. And, you know, on the surface, it sounds very popular because McGuinty is selling it as, oh, we're cutting the salaries or we're cutting the budgets of doctors, you know, creating this impression that these guys have made enough money and too much for too long and we're about to put the screws to them. And boy, there's another side there. And I know that Dr. Dworkin is far more capable of giving you what I think is the objective perspective, because he's affected by it, he's a doctor, than me just trying to tackle the issue and having your calls come in. So I'm going to cut him loose and tell you what's at stake. But I also want you to know that we are taking calls tonight, okay? Not medical calls. But if you've got concerns or insights or questions, or you want to know, well, what are the chances, of me losing my family doctor? What can I do? Can we stop this thing? If you want to call them up and say, I know you doctors, blah, blah, blah. If you want to go down that track, it doesn't matter, okay? All I'm saying is Dr. Dworkin is in the house tonight all the way till 11 o'clock, okay? And it's not about symptoms tonight. It's not about medical conditions. It's about what is going to happen. To health care in Ontario in the next year or two if some of this legislation goes through. What did I miss?
No, I think you're pretty thorough.
Okay, you're going to be a lot more thorough, yeah, I hope. What really got me, and you sent out an email to, and there wasn't a lot of people on your list here. You sent out an email that said, I'm going to read it here. For those of you that are not physicians on this list, you will lose your doctor if this stuff goes through, okay? That sounds pretty drastic, pal.
Yeah, it is, and I'm not a person that goes, that panics.
Well, and that's why I got this letter from you, and I'm going, man, if Barry's talking like this, I need to get him on here. We need to talk.
The first thing I
Why are we going to lose our doctor?
The reason is that the cuts that they are proposing next year, and we've already seen this government by fiat, essentially decree, this is what we're doing to your fees. We don't care what you have to say. Mm-hmm. When physicians came and said, okay, freeze our fees for 2 years and we're going to help find you $250 million in savings. And John, the government said, we don't care about that. This is what we want. Take it or leave it, or we legislate it. So there was no negotiation at all. We came back and said, can you please get a conciliator to try and arrange things? Nope. We're going to pass this. This is what we want to do.
But your spokespeople must have went to them and said, no, we can't function if you do this.
Of course, but the government believes that it knows better. So the issue at hand is, and I want to say this at the beginning so that people understand where I'm coming from. I don't care what happens to my salary per se, right? I can go anywhere. If my practice closed tomorrow, I could go anywhere to work. I don't want to go anywhere. Mm-hmm. I love where I am. I love my job. And my pride and joy is my practice.
And the people you provide and care for. That is your practice.
It is like an extended family.
Of course.
I've known people for over 20 years.
Yeah.
So when somebody threatens harm to my family, and that's my practice.
Right.
That is the employees that I have as well. I get defensive.
Mm-hmm.
And so the issue becomes that, in a nutshell, the government is planning in one fell swoop by next year, through all the cuts that they are proposing, without considering the ramifications of what those cuts will do, of at least 20 to 25% of my income. And this is going to happen over the course of 4 years.
And that's not your salary. That's your income
that's
for which
income.
You can charge to run your practice
that's
with
right.
your employees and the equipment
correct.
And the testing and everything
yeah.
that's done.
So what happens is that you cannot afford to run your practice. Physicians can. If your practice closes down, okay, I'll go somewhere else. I
right.
don't want to do that. And that's the issue. I don't care if my salary is frozen for 5 years. It doesn't matter to me. Right. I'm privileged to do what I'm doing.
Uh-huh.
Right. And I do earn a good income. And I'm upfront with people. You know, it's about $250,000 a year. That's my gross income.
But you know, if push comes to shove, you can make way more than that someplace else.
There was a letter that came from Calgary.
Right.
Advertising for physicians for $400,000 with no overhead.
Yeah.
Okay. For people to come from here over to there. So we get letters like that all the time. I don't want to go anywhere.
Yeah.
I don't want to, you know.
And in the States, it's even higher.
Right. So the issue is we set up a practice at the government's urging to do this.
Sure.
In terms of setting up what we call a family health organization. So a family health organization is what we call a capitated system. And I know this sounds, it's complicated, but this is the issue.
People, you haven't lost me yet, and yeah. I'm easy to lose. So.
Okay. So essentially, patients register with your practice.
Right.
They register with your practice, and in doing so, there are benefits to doing that.
Right.
Access to care 12 hours a day, open on the weekends, open on holidays, telephone answering service, coming to see the nurses. And there's a whole scope
and
of
you're
practice.
Dealing with somebody that knows your family history
right.
firsthand.
That's
okay.
Right.
And so there are
incentives, making sure that preventive care services are done, making sure people have their screening for colon cancer, for breast cancer.
Right.
Cervical cancer screening, make sure your elderly patients have flu shots, making sure all your children have vaccinations. All of this was included in a package to be able to provide physicians the ability to do that
mm-hmm.
by setting up their practices, investing in their practices to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Now they turn around by next year, all those specific incentives, and I've sent you the documents, and as I said, it's complicated
how
this is done. But all those incentives that where we sign contracts with the government to do this and make the investments and do all this stuff are taken away.
What month next year?
April 2013.
So it's April 2013.
Right.
Because you keep saying next year, but yeah. I want people to realize it's 11 months from now.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so when you take all of this away and your practice has been designed to provide these services – including, for example, John, we send out letters to over 4,000 patients a year
mm-hmm.
reminding them that they need various preventive treatments.
And it's custom care.
Yeah, and that's right. And who pays for it? We pay for it,
mm-hmm.
right? It's doing 4,000 letters, paying the staff to do it, the mailings, following up, having the patients come in, booking the appointments, doing the treatments, doing the preventive care. It costs money to do that. And that's some of the incentive is the government gives you. You bill for that when you do it, and so you get covered to be able to provide that service.
So are you saying that with a 20-25% cut, it would be impossible for you to do a scaled-down version?
You can't.
You can't.
It's
either run the way it's running.
Our practice runs almost non-profit. That's how our practice runs.
Okay.
Right? The philosophy of our practice, and I started this November.
And most practices are like yours, aren't
yes.
they?
Yes,
I mean,
they
you're
are.
Not you're not uncommon, the way
no.
the priorities that
no,
you have
we,
in your
we,
practice.
We started our practice November 28th, 1992.
Mm-hmm.
We started with four physicians, one secretary, and then added one nurse. We now, and we were about 3,300 square feet. We now have 6,300 square feet of space. We have four nurses, 10 physicians, over 16 staff. And finally, John, we were able, in terms of, you know, we talk about family,
mm-hmm.
finally able to offer our staff, because of the work we've done to build up our practice and make it function efficiently, able to provide benefits to our staff,
mm-hmm.
right? It's not heard of.
And that's only in the last how long? Year or two?
We started that in January.
In January.
Just this past January.
So it took 19 years
to get to that.
And, before you could even provide benefits for your staff.
Right. And we still have business debt that we are paying at just over $2,000 a month. We still have about $133,000 of business commercial debt because of the expansion we took because the government asked us to form this practice.
Sure. And your story is very common, though. I want to emphasize that. Okay. It's not, you're not unique in the circumstances.
Right.
Your story can be told, what, thousands of times over in the province? At least hundreds of times.
So what the government is proposing, or what they're planning to do, because if they've already, I mean, they've done a couple of things, John. One is, it is a brilliant example of propaganda where you have a government that demonizes a particular segment of your society and blames them for economic problems, right? And then gets the population to say, yes, that group is the problem. Do whatever you want to them because they are the problem.
Yeah.
And how many times in the history have we seen that happen?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's the same modus operandi of this particular government to do that type of propaganda. And so when I see that, I go, what have I done to be so heinous?
Demonized.
What have I done to hurt people so that the government talks about me that way?
Yeah.
And so their plan is, again, we'll get into all, and I encourage callers to call and ask any question you want about how practices operate.
Because even in 90 minutes, you're not going to be able to cover the complexities of what's
there.
How the
billings are done. If you want to know how things work in a practice, please call. I'll be more than happy to explain how things work.
Now, I need to ask you, I know they've got a virtual majority. I can't see the NDP coming against them on this, okay? Although miracles do happen. What can people do? Because they're stonewalling you.
Yes,
once people realize they're going to lose their family doctor, and when it's put in that stark terms, that just might get a movement going. What can people do?
They have to not only write letters, and if you have everybody start sending letters in, and you get hundreds of thousands of letters arriving there, they have to take notice, especially a letter.
So to the Ministry of the Minister of Health and their MP?
The MPs.
MPP?
The leaders of the opposition, so Andrea Horvath and Tim Hudak.
Okay.
You just have to make noise. We know that when enough people make noise, they listen, because governments will panic if the population that they haven't targeted is all of a sudden upset over what they are doing. But we are stuck. Physicians are not going to go on strike. Physicians are not going to abandon their patients. Physicians are, it's in my core of providing care to my patients. I can't abandon my patients.
Yeah.
So they know that. So the whole idea behind good faith bargaining is just say, you know, we realize that you are not like a union that can go on strike. Treat us with some respect. And at least we're more than willing to negotiate to try and figure things out.
521-8255. There's already people waiting on the line to get on the air. You're all getting on the air, okay? But I wanted Barry to get this message out, and I hope you understand the implications of this. And if we're not being clear, and you wanna pin his ears back, and you wanna get some specifics, that's why he's here. 521-8255. Don't be calling in though and asking why you're having a sore back. 521-8255. Not tonight. Star 580 on Bell Mobility. 1-800-580-2372 is the long distance line. jcouncil@cfra.com is the email address. It's got to be under six lines. You can tweet at us at JWCouncil. You're on hold. You're getting on the air. Right back after this. Stay with us.
He may be just a little bit ahead of his time, but don't worry. You'll catch up. Stay up a little extra tonight with Late Night Council on News Talk Radio 580 CFRA.
This is Late Night Council on News Talk Radio 580 CFRA.
Okay, kids, if you're not able to get on the air before the news break at the top of the hour, don't get discouraged, because Dr. Dworkin is with us for the entire 2 hours tonight. And, next hour. And I wanted to give him the time because this is really, really important stuff. And I know he doesn't have the time to talk about this kind of stuff when he does a Sunday house call and when he's on with Rob Snow taking your calls. So you need to be informed. And if there's things that we're not being specific on, we're not making clear, that's why you need to call in. 521-8255. That's 521-8255. Here's Gus in Ottawa. Hi, Gus.
Hey, John. Hey, Doc. What's cooking?
Oh, I'm pretty good. How are you?
Oh, can't complain. I think I only ever talked to you once.
Right.
So there we go. This is twice now.
Okay.
All right. So let's say I possess the power to grant you the power to have all of the money and fiduciary expenditure in Ontario. That is to say, I replace Deb Matthews with you,
mm-hmm.
okay, and gave you the power even to override the finance minister in spending and to completely change all of Ontario's healthcare system. And the reason I'm asking you this is because, you see, the problem is I remember Elizabeth Whitmer back in the 90s saying that healthcare alone gobbled up almost 50 cents of every tax dollar paid in Ontario. And those numbers are going up.
Correct.
So while I completely agree with you that kicking the snot out of doctors is not the smartest way to reduce costs, if it even would reduce costs in the first place when you think about it, what would you do to stop the galloping upward trend of healthcare costs while still maintaining fulsome and comprehensive care of patients?
It's a great question. And in fact, the elephant in the room on this, Gus, is you have and you've identified the problem exactly. The government cannot afford the Cadillac. The government refuses to admit that it can't afford the Cadillac. And as a result, it rations what it has in order to try and extend it out for as long as it can, because it doesn't want to be the guy to finally say, we can't afford health care anymore, and we have to change how the system works.
No government wants to pay that political price.
That's right. But the elephant in the room is that, as in other parts of the world, we cannot have a single payer anymore. You have to look at where the priorities are. You want to have a system that protects people from catastrophic illness so that they don't go bankrupt. You want to have a system that encourages people, as in other countries. So we're not looking at the United States. In fact, I never want to look at the United States for a system. I want to look at other systems that promote universal coverage. And in every other country that does that, you have a blended system where it is mandated for people to, if they can afford it, to have insurance to purchase, to be able to choose and access care as they see fit, and then for those that fall below a certain income line, get covered for all the stuff, and the insurance is covered for them. In fact, there are some governments that get out of the healthcare business altogether, and they oversee the companies to ensure quality of care is maintained, and they set the standards and regulations to ensure quality of care. They also have a system where there is constant reporting of outcomes from hospital services, physician services, and post it so patients have the ability to choose where the best care is. So the elephant in the room and the answer to the question is that people are going to have a blended system, just as we have now, where you have certain elements of society, certain people. Our government officials are a great example where they have gold-plated insurance coverage for stuff that you and I can't even get, right? And other people can't get. They make the decisions for people on social assistance for medications that those people cannot get that I'd like them to get, but their insurance plans give it to them. So you have this hypocrisy in our system where you already have multiple tiers of access, but nothing officially talked about. So what I think we need to do...
How much of this would you turn over to the private sector?
It's not even a matter of private sector.
Well, okay, if the government's not doing it and the private sector's not doing it, who's doing it?
No, what I am saying is that you have a system, as you have in Europe, where you have accountability for your performance so that the fees that are being charged, you have competition. Fees aren't outrageous in Europe, where you have one hospital competing against another. You have better standards and better outcomes, because the only way you're going to earn your income from your patient, who now has control over their health because they're the one wielding the dollars, is by providing them good care. You don't provide them good care, they're not going to go anywhere. They're not going to go to your place. Right now, there's no incentive to do that. You have physicians who are working hard to provide care.
I just want to be clear now,
yes,
though. The hospitals, would they or would they not receive the bulk of their funding from government?
They wouldn't.
Okay, so that means that by definition, they would have to get the bulk of their funding from insurance policy?
From the patients who go there and the company that covers their costs.
Okay.
Right.
And you're saying that in cases of patients who do not possess the ability to pay, their level of care would not be compromised because the government would step in?
Absolutely.
Okay. So that being the case, how would you avoid the absolute car crash that they have down in the States, where medical insurance companies and it's not just because they exert a power over the industry directly. Mm-hmm. Of course, anytime someone tries to make a law the HMOs don't like, they run to Congress and buy themselves a congressman, right?
Mm-hmm.
So How do you avoid that? Only through, you know, government, which would basically be government regulation through inspection and verification, in a situation where you have a political system that where politicians rely on a full bank account to get elected more and more these days.
It's a change in political culture altogether. You're absolutely correct. But I'm not suggesting we reinvent the wheel. There are already models in motion in other countries.
Now,
that
no
work
system's
reasonably
perfect,
well.
But name
absolutely
a country that you've seen, whoa, that would work in Canada. We could do that here. Is there a country that you can specify?
In Switzerland, they have insurance companies and the government oversees things.
Okay.
In France, they have public and private. Even in Sweden, they've privatized their hospitals. So it's not, I don't care whether something is public or private. I care if the service is available to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just the thing that concerns me, watching corporations of any kind. People say that corporations, when you have a semi-free market system, corporations tend to compete. Well, anyone who buys gas knows that what they do is they tend to collude.
Right. Except,
and then all you've got left at that point is the strength of government.
Right. And you have a valid point, Gus. But what I'm saying is that this is not hypothetical, because we see this in operation in other countries and we don't see that effect.
European corporate models are a little different than they are in North America. It's not to say they don't believe in money over there. They do. But I think there's a, you know, there is no Enron in Europe. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I respect your opinion.
Right.
I'm terribly concerned at whether or not we could ever make that work here without getting seriously hurt.
Now the end result, Gus, and again it goes back to your initial point, is that we're running out of funds, whether it is now or later. The system is going to crash. We already see this because of the way the government is acting. So do we preempt it and recognize it, or do we wait for the crash and then see complete anarchy?
And we got to get smart, and we got to get quick, and we got to go.
Gus,
we're out of time.
He raises excellent points.
Yeah, Gus, great call. Thanks for your call. Right back after the news, kids. If you're on hold, you're getting on the air. Stay with us.
He may be just a little bit ahead of his time, but don't worry. You'll catch up. Stay up a little extra tonight with Late Night Counsel on News Talk Radio 580 CFRA.
If it's important, he's already talking about it. You're listening to Late Night Counsel on 580 CFRA.
Welcome back to the show. I have a familiar voice as a guest in the studio tonight. It is Dr. Barry Dworkin, if you're just joining us. And it's not Ask the Doctor tonight, although, of course, he's a doctor, but we're not taking medical questions here. If you got a goiter, you know, you got to call him on Wednesday, okay, when he's with Rob Snow, or Sunday House Call. When's Sunday House Call on again? Give us the hours, you know. Don't mind.
4 to 5 on Sunday.
4 to 5 Sunday afternoon.
And with Rob Snow, 3 to 4 on Wednesdays.
With the cuts that are coming from the McGuinty government, folks, I don't think people in Ontario realize the implications of how this is going to affect your everyday life. And Barry has a unique platform in, you know, the show he does in CFRA. And, you know, we educate, we inform, we entertain. But when something as drastic this is coming down the pike, boy, the need for information is so crucial. And you know how we hold the McGuinty government's feet to the fire on this station. This is an issue that they're not telling you the whole side of it. And I felt an obligation to make sure that the implications of these cuts are known. And Dr. Dworkin, like, you're going to get to the specifics of it, of course. And folks, if I'm not asking the right questions as well, if I'm not making things clear, you need to call in. 521-8255. He's going to be with us till the end of the program. That's 11 o'clock. And he doesn't get a chance to talk about stuff like this on his own programs. So take advantage of it. 521-8255, *580 on Bell Mobility. 1-800-580-2372 is the long distance line. Everybody in the Liberal and the NDP and the Conservative Party knows we are short of cash, and we know the thing's going to crash, okay? And it's almost as if, like, McGuinty knows what has to happen to fix this.
Right.
Am I right in assuming that he's not willing to pay the political price, because he will be the guy that's seen as the guy that ended health care as we know it in Ontario? But wouldn't it be better to have a controlled,
absolutely,
you know, a controlled and a well thought out transition, as opposed to we'll just pretend it's not happening, and we'll keep delaying, and we'll keep borrowing from our future? Well, you know the kind of debt that this province is in. We can't borrow anymore. Our credit rating has been downgraded, and I don't really see a transition happening under McGuinty. Do you?
No, they're wedded to ideology. And in fact, they even passed a law, the Commitment to the Future of Medicare Act, which they passed in their first term, prohibits physicians from opting out of OHIP. It prohibits patients for purchasing care in Ontario. They won't open up any private MRI centers, or even you can use your OHIP card. Just not going to happen. The issue, when you boil it down to dollars and cents, and I'm going to talk about family practice, what this really boils down to is the government is short $60 to $80 per person per year. That's the amount of money it would take for family physicians' offices to not suffer from the cuts. Where,
just to continue on the way they're
yeah, but 60
the way
bucks,
they've been going.
60 bucks yeah. a year
yeah.
per person.
Per person.
Right? The way we are paid in our what's called a capitation system. So capitation refers to pay by the head.
Right.
So for someone your age, John, I would get paid for the entire year about $90 for your care mm-hmm. for unlimited service. You can come one time, you can come 10 times, it's still $90.
Right.
There are additional fees that the government pays. One is called, it's called a CCM fee or a comprehensive care payment. What this covers is all the stuff that I'm not paid for on your visit. So for example, it's management of, for example, care of the elderly, complex medical problems, reviewing numerous diagnostic tests, procedures, dealing with allied health professionals, social service communications, also all the forms that are filled out that we don't get paid for, renewing prescriptions every morning. There's 20 on my desk to renew. Every morning there is 20 or 25 reports to review, and each one of those you don't just sign off on. You have to look up on the patient's chart. You have to make sure what your management is going to be.
And every detail, every T crossed, every I dotted, and you screw up on any of those reports, it could be life or death on those things.
Right. And I am paid, on average, for that service, $2.50 per person per month.
And that's for all of those practices.
For all those things.
Yeah.
So that's $2.50. So, and that's the average. It's less for younger individuals, mm-hmm. it's more for older individuals mm-hmm. because of the complex care. That amounts to, again, if I have a practice of 1,600 patients, that's 1,600 times $2.50 per mm-hmm. month, mm-hmm. right? That goes away next April. They're going to cut a third of that off and then eliminate it over the next 2 or 3 years. That amounts to over 10 to 15% of the income to cover these services in one fell swoop. So that's the first thing that they're planning to cut. The second.
So for instance, how are people going to get prescriptions filled?
They're going to have to come in because I don't have the time. If I'm not going to have the time to do that, I'm going to have to increase access for them to come in and do it. It's you can't do something for free, right? You can't just do this stuff and be able to operate your office. You need to be able to see people or add more people in to increase your revenue to be able to cover the costs. You can't, if you have a cut, John, the idea is that if there's a cut of just this, which is 10 to 15%.
Right.
That's 10 to 15% to the office, which means I have to cut staff. When mm-hmm. I review these results.
Well, you have to cut staff, but then you've got off staff, they can't do the work that's there.
Yes, and the point is that when I review a result, I'll send a note to the nurse saying, please let this patient know this result was X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. Please and let them know this is what they need to do. So I send that off to the nurse. I lose that person that I can tell that to.
Yeah.
So I don't have the time now to call every single person to let them know. And I'm not exaggerating.
No,
it's a very finely tuned office where everybody has their role. You get rid of two people, which is that it amounts to getting rid of two staff at least. That means that I can't do that in the morning. Patients are going to have to come in so I see them to be able to deal with that issue there. I can't do that outside of the time that I have my appointments. And those forms that I get, the results that I get in the morning, that's just the first round.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole bunch that come again at noon, and there's a whole bunch again that come at 4 o'clock in the afternoon because you have the medical courier that comes twice a day mm-hmm, to mm-hmm. deliver this stuff. So you're dealing with about 100 pieces of documentation every day.
So it's the equivalent of, like, the system that you have put together in your practice and your, has taken 19 to 20 years to perfect. It's, it's humming like a fine-tuned machine, and it needs lubrication, and it needs maintenance, and you're tweaking a bolt here and tweaking a bolt there, and all of a sudden a wrench gets thrown into the thing, and gears fly off, and spindles are going everywhere, and there's pieces on the floor, and you don't even know where to start now because it's – The fuel's not there anymore.
Right. So you can't, and again, this goes to care. You can't then provide that element of care that people are depending on. Mm-hmm. And again, $2.50 per person per month, right? So we're talking about that $60. That's $30 of that $60.
So it's a miracle you guys can do what you do, even with what you're getting paid now before the cuts.
And this was done. The government encouraged us to do this. This was designed by them to do this. And we said, okay, we'll do this. So this is not us saying this is what we wanted. This was through negotiation.
Right.
And the government said yes, because we want to encourage more patients to see family doctors, to be able to provide this comprehensive care. And so we fulfilled that mandate. And I have to give the government credit where credit is due. It works really well. And so The to change this now in midstream, when they have said our goal was to do this, takes away the ability to provide that care. The other aspect now in our practice is something called an access bonus. The access bonus is designed to encourage physicians. The government says, okay, here's 80% of what you could potentially earn for the year. The other 20%, if you want that, you have to try and ensure that patients come and see you, and therefore increase your hours, provide evening on-call service, provide weekends, provide drop-in services.
In other words, sleeping, Barry.
Yeah, right. So you do this, and the access bonus is measured as the amount that they're ready to pay you as a group, because it goes to the group, it doesn't go to an individual physician.
Right.
The amount they're willing to pay you on the basis of the number of patients that you have, they calculate that number. And then they add up all the patients that have gone elsewhere to see other physicians. And so they take the difference each month. So say, for example, we would have a payment of potentially $20,000 for the month if everybody came to see us that month. But that doesn't happen. And $15,000 worth of that has gone outside. So what the government says is, well, you lose 15, you're only going to get 5. Fine. That's fine, because we know ahead of time we're trying. And by the way, our access bonus, since we started this, has gone up consistently every 6 months. When they add this up, we continue to have more patients. We keep adding more time in, covering the areas. We can manage things on a day-to-day basis to know how to run and manage that access to get patients to come in. What they're now going to do in terms of changing this is now they're going to say, now if we're going to take away your access bonus, and we're going to have straight negation. Now, you're going to hear that word over and over again. Negation means that here's your income. This is the total amount that you could potentially make. And now we're going to deduct from you every time a patient goes out elsewhere. No maximum. So in other words, guys, you got to be open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to try and capture all your patients. Because if not, this can add up, and I am not joking about this, this can add up to between $50,000 to $100,000 per physician in lost income if patients are able to just go and then the government asks us to pay for their visit elsewhere.
521-8255 is the number to call. Folks, if something's not clear, give us a call. 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility. 1-800-580-2372 is the long distance line. Do you want to do something about this? Go to supportontariodoctors.ca. There's a petition there that is targeted towards your MPP and various other leaders involved, like Deb Matthews, Dalton McGuinty, Andrea Horvath, Tim Hudak, Ontario, supportontariodoctors.ca. More with Dr. Barry Dworkin when we come back. Email jcouncil@cfra.com. You got to keep it under six lines. Stay with us.
He may be just a little bit ahead of his time, but don't worry. You'll catch up. Stay up a little extra tonight with Late Night Counsel on News Talk Radio 580 CFRA.
Presiding over the court of public opinion, you're listening to Late Night Counsel on 580 CFRA.
Welcome back. Dr. Barry Dworkin is with us tonight. And there's a good chance you're going to lose your family doctor. Okay? And that's not overstating the situation with the cuts that are coming to health care through the McGuinty government. 521-8255 is the number to call. That's 521-8255. Star 580 on the Bell Mobility System. 1-800-580-2372 is the long-distance line. jcouncil@cfra.com is the email address. You can it's got to be under six lines. And you can tweet at us at jwcouncil. I got an email for you here, Dr. Dworkin from Seb. In the opinion of the doctor, how will the provincial government's proposed cutbacks affect doctors who are still practicing as individuals on a fee-for-service basis as opposed to group practices based on capitation, such as his practice?
The fee-for-service has already been reduced. Very small change. The main code that is used for that, which is called an intermediate assessment, or when you come in and assessing for a cold or heart disease or cancer or breast disease or intestinal, is fee-for-service for that was $34.70. That, and these are gross figures, right? This is before expenses and everything. $34 for the visit. And just to give, and I'm not trying to be smart-alecky or anything, you take your puppy to the vet and it's $90 to $100.
Of course.
So just to get some perspective here, right? But they reduce that by a dollar. So again, it's a 1% or whatever decrease. Not a huge thing. But the fee-for-service physicians are going to lose also some of that comprehensive care fees that I just mentioned, where you get paid. So they're going to lose that. And the government's intention is they don't like fee-for-service, so they want to I have no proof of this, but their actions dictate that they want people to be in groups and not in fee-for-service. But it's very difficult for straight fee-for-service physicians to run an office now. It's almost impossible. In fact, the fee-for-service physicians tend to work in groups or in walk-in centers to be able to cover costs, because as a single physician, the expenses and to be able to try and provide the care that you want to provide are now prohibitive. It's very difficult as a single physician. Some of the older established physicians are able to do this. They have their own structure. But with the newer offices, electronic records, our place is all electronic, you know, all the investments that are made. You just can't, not on a fee-for-service salary. And that was the whole point of the government getting us into family health organizations. Yes, we had increase in fees because of that. But yes, we actually added more staff. Between 2008 and 2012, we had two nurses. In 2008, we now have four. We had six physicians in 2008. We now have 10. We wanted to add an 11th in December. We want to add a 12th after that. And the idea is, and our business model was, adding two more physicians generates more income, so then I can hire. And the promise I made to my to our group was to get either a nurse practitioner or a physician assistant to help cover more services for people. So it's not a matter of getting more physicians in to pocket the profit, and
sure,
I showed you,
I just showed you
our business ledger, right? Where we, you know, we had eight between October and now, we've spent $819,000 in expenses, and our revenue is $820,000. So it's right
a 1% cut. You're in the red.
Yeah. So the idea is we take pride in providing excellent service, and that's what's killing us, is not being able to do that. Think of, for our listeners, just think of anything you've worked hard on to build up, and you've put a lot of work into it, and then someone comes and kicks it down without telling you why they're actually doing that when they told you to build the thing in the first place.
521-8255 is the number to call. Here's Jean in the PN. Hi, Jean.
Hi, doctor.
Hi.
I learned something that I'm just wondering if you could tell me why. I only see my doctor about twice a year, usually annual checkup, and she usually works 5 days per week.
Right.
I've had her for about 5 years, and today when I tried to make an appointment, the secretary told me she only worked 2 days per week. Do you know why?
I have no idea why. She may have some illnesses. She may be working at the hospital. She may be has other responsibilities. I'm not sure. We have some physicians who are there 3 days and some 4 days a week. I'm there 5 days a week. But what we manage to do is that for those that are there 3 days a week, we have them sharing rooms. We have them. We have it so that you have enough coverage. When you have 10 physicians, the idea is that in a family health organization where, I don't know if this is what you're in, where you sign up with your physician, but everybody, all the physicians are responsible for all the patients. You have your own physician, but each of us has, for example, a time during the day where we do what's called urgent care. Mine happens to be on Tuesday mornings between 9 and 1. Patients just come in. They're given a time that they for their appointment. At that on that day, they can come in. They get a time. They don't have to sit there waiting 3 hours. They come in at that time. We run on time. And they're in and out quickly. They're happy. They get the service. And that's what we do. And so it can be any patient of any of the physicians in the group that can come at that time. And that's what we do for 11 hours per day, from 9 till 8 every day. We do that during the week for our patients to have that access on top of regular appointments, on top of same-day appointments, on top of same-week appointments. We've tried to accommodate our schedules as best as possible so that patients are not waiting months and months to see their physician. So for her working two, you may want to just ask why it's changed.
Yeah, you know. I should have asked the sector, but I never got a letter notifying me about that.
Right.
And if she works elsewhere, I mean, are you saying she might be working at the hospital too?
She may be working at a hospital. We have a physician who in the mornings works at the hospital. On a specific ward looking after patients.
And then
he comes to the practice in the afternoon.
But shouldn't she have notified patients with a letter and say...
She really only has to notify patients if she is leaving her practice.
I see.
The fact that she's there means that she's still there. Now, you can certainly ask her, you know, what has resulted, but there's usually a good reason why. And a lot of times it's health reasons. Mm-hmm. Others, it's other responsibilities.
Yeah, that's what I wonder. Yeah. She's so young, I said, she couldn't be retiring.
No, maybe she's pregnant.
That
happens too.
You know, there can be illnesses, all kinds of things. So it's good to ask why, because otherwise you end up with, you know, wondering, you know, particular reasons. Oh, I like the Super Tramp. That's great.
Yeah, I just thought it's something new that's coming up.
I don't think it's anything new. I just think that there's likely something in her life that's contributing to this change.
Jean, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
521-8255 is the number to call. That's 521-8255. Quick break for the news. If you're on hold, you're going to get on the air. Star 580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-582-3372 is the long distance line. And if you can get under six lines, jcouncil at cfra.com. Right back after the news. Stay with us.
He may be just a little bit ahead of his time, but don't worry. You'll catch up. Stay up a little extra tonight with Late Night Counsel on News Talk Radio 580 CFRA.
He doesn't tuck you in. He doesn't kiss you goodnight. But when it's dark, he's irresistible. Late Night Counsel on 580 CFRA.
Okay, I got John waiting on hold, and I'm going to get him on in just a second. And I got Jeremy's email. They're almost identical, the two concerns, okay? Now, wait a moment, Jeremy writes. Now, wait a moment. Please elaborate. Is it a good possibility we will lose our family doctors or a likelihood?
If you are not able to provide enough funding for your office to provide the care, the office closes. Your family doctor then either reverts to sporadic care, meaning there's no adequate follow-up, there's no comprehensive care, there's nothing that you normally would expect of your family doctor. They may work in a drop-in center. They may form large groups where they, in order to try and cover costs, or they may leave because they just cannot afford to run the practice here. So am I going to say 100% of all physicians are going to leave? Probably not. But the way you are provided family medicine and the way your family doctor provides family medicine today is going to disappear. And that's what I mean by you will lose your family doctor in terms of...
So at the very least, you are saying that we are looking at the most dramatic effect on healthcare that this province has ever seen in our lifetimes.
Absolutely. I mentioned that term negation, right? Where patients, when they go elsewhere, physician will have to pay, and it could result in tens of thousands of dollars off, and they have no control over that. Well, the other aspect of patient care is that there are physicians, other family physicians, that have specialties. So those that are in sports medicine, who do psychotherapy, who do various things. They are, if we right now refer someone to that family doctor, we don't get negated. they have a special code so that the government recognizes that we're sending that patient to an expert in a particular field, sports medicine, and the patient's visit to that physician, when the physician bills for it, doesn't come back on us to be taken away, which makes sense, right? You want to, you're sending your patient to someone, but you're not being penalized for doing that.
Right.
That disappears. The government is taking away those specific exemptions from those physicians. So it's going to affect those physicians because you're going to see a lot less people being sent to them, because every time you send that patient to them,
family doctor can't afford it.
Family doctor has to pay for it.
Right, right.
So you're going, what are you doing? You know, you want to take care of your patient, and yet now the government is saying, well, if you do, you guys have to pay for it.
Let's go to John in Ottawa. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
How am I? Well, you know, from the news I'm getting tonight, I'm not very good, John. I'm quite concerned about this.
Yeah, I'm very concerned. Dr. Barry Broughton, you know me long enough.
Yes.
What are the chances of me losing my family doctor? You're saying to me, I've been listening to this for the last half hour.
It's I wouldn't be saying what I'm saying to be alarmist. I'm saying this because, frankly, I am frightened with what's going to happen next year. It is literally freaking me out in terms of looking at how it's going to impact our practice. As I said, my practice is my baby. It has 20 years of work to build this up. It is frankly, and all modesty aside, I believe our practice is one of the best practices in the city in terms of the services we provide. There are other practices that equally do that, but we've really made an effort to do that, and we've done that because of the uptake. We accepted what the government offered in order to do that, because that encouraged that type of professional services. And that is going, all the incentives, all the funding that went to be able to provide these services is going to disappear. And so if it disappears, I can't do the job I'm trained to do. I can't do the job that I love to do. I can't take care of the patients that I've known for 20 years the way I'd like to take care of them. And that kills me. And so when I see others deciding for my practice, what elements of that practice can be discarded and which ones they want to keep, when none of them have ever seen a patient or taken care of a patient, but yet seem to know better than me on how to practice and how to provide care, it drives me crazy. And so when I look at this and say, you know, guys, we accepted no increases. We were willing to decrease the costs, find ways to reduce the costs, and negotiate with you because we know what areas could be cut, what areas shouldn't be cut, but we would agree to cutting and doing our share. But the government doesn't want that. It thinks it knows what to cut and doesn't understand the law of unintended consequences.
Can I step in? I've been living with my family doctor for 14 years on baseline, at least probably 15 since 99.
Right.
What are the chances now that this worst case scenario ever in history?
If your physician faces anywhere between a 10 to 25% reduction in their income, that means a 10 to 25% reduction in their overhead payments to their office. And I can bet you that they will not be able to survive that. They will have to cut their services. So what we call a family physician will no longer be a family physician. And that's what I mean by you will lose your family physician, because family physicians is a family practice is a specialty, and there are specific things that we are trained to do. And if you can't do it, you're not a family doctor anymore.
Dramatic and drastic reduction in healthcare.
One more question.
Now, John, I got to go to another caller here, John. Appreciate you calling in. 521-8255 is the number to call. Here's Gloria in Ottawa. Hi, Gloria.
Hi. I just want to say that I have become a victim of the new laws for the doctors here in Ontario. I received a letter this month saying that my doctor, for over 20 years, she's closing her practice. She's been unable to get another doctor to take it over, and I am without a doctor as of the 3rd of June. So I am very upset.
It's going to be even more difficult to find any physician that wants to take over practices with the environment that's being created by this government. It's not only, you know, it's not about the salary. And I'm going to say this over and over again. Physicians are a very privileged group of people. And we understand that our income is far and above what a lot of
it
people
has
make.
It has nothing to do
but,
with it.
But the fact of the matter is that if you cannot practice, and if what ends up is that 80% of what you earn has to go to your practice in order to provide the service, mm-hmm. you just can't function that way.
No,
you cannot provide the care that you want to provide. And so as a result, physicians will go elsewhere to do that. And you have other jurisdictions that will poach physicians.
He's got lots of money for windmills and solar panels.
And Orange and everything else.
Yep.
So, you know, it's very upsetting on what they plan to do. And, you know, even if we take at face value and say nothing is going to change next year, right? They're going to freeze things and nothing is going to change. Where they're going to what they're essentially saying is we are capping the total amount. This is what Bob Ray did in the 90s, and even Mike Harris did this. They capped the total amount of money that was going to be funded towards physicians, right? So in this case, I think it's $10.7 billion out of that. Frankly, a heck of a lot of money. But what they're saying is that any new physicians that come into the pool, at the end of a year, they add up everything that's been paid out. And so if, for example, they've paid out $12 billion and the cap is $10.7 billion, they claw back $1.3 billion from the physicians to cover the cost. And that's what they did to us each time. But the problem is that we're not standing out there saying, oh, you come into my office. Oh, you come into my office. Hey, why don't you come see me? Why don't you come see? That's not how it works. It's patient driven, patient demand.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at what's going to happen over the next 4 years, it's about 700 new physicians a year. And by the way, John, if the government really didn't want to pay for those physicians, they don't have to give them what we call a billing number. In order to be able to bill OHIP to get paid, the government has to give you a number that you use. If they don't want those physicians to work and they're saying, well, we can't afford it, don't give them the number. But instead, they're giving them the number, and then because then they look like the good guys, and they say, look, we have all these new physicians coming in. But then those physicians enter into the pool. They do the stuff that they're supposed to do. And you have cost overrun, and they know there's going to be an overrun. But they say, you see how much they're billing? We're going to claw that back. And so every year, you get a clawback. And that's what we had with Bob Ray, where at one out of every 10 patients that we saw was for free, right, because of the clawbacks. So that doesn't end. Where is that going to end? 4 years, 5 years, 10 years? What is their plan that way?
The debt's getting bigger and bigger with no sign of reducing it. So those bills got to be paid.
So that amounts, and again, you have to account also for retirement. So even if you say that's about an 8 or between 6 to 7%, 10%, whatever that value is, that's the amount of extra dollars that is going to be deducted from the physicians just from that. Then you have, and this is from the federal government, the government of Canada, the annual growth rate of Ontario's population is projected to grow about 1.2% in 2010-11 mm-hmm. and then 1% by 2035-36. That amounts over the next 4 years to a 4 to 5% increase in our population, which means 4 to 5% increase in demand. So there's that. Then you have consumer price index of 1.9% a year. Multiply that by 4 years, mm-hmm. not even compounding it, you end up with 7.6%. You add all those percentages up of just that cost of what's happening with our population, with inflation, with new physicians, with our aging population, and that's 20 to 23% more that it will cost for things that we can't control at all.
And Dalton says, not on my watch.
And that is not then including the cuts.
521-8255 is the number to call. That's 521-8255. So, folks, what would you rather have, windmills and solar panels or a family doctor? It's come down to that. And the unfortunate thing is, you don't even get to make that choice because McGinty's already made it for you. He's keeping his solar panels and his windmills. 521-8255, *580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372 is the long distance line. We got one segment left, kids, so if you want to get on the air and be informed and ask the specifics, you're running out of time. Got to bang those numbers pretty quick. Stay with us.
He may be just a little bit ahead of his time, but don't worry. You'll catch up. Stay up a little extra tonight with Late Night Counsel on News Talk Radio 580 CFRA.
If you're on hold, you're going to get on the air. I want to squeeze in this email, though, from Chris. It's a good question. The short of my question is, wouldn't the cuts turn into user fees that could be used by the doctors to make up some of the shortfall?
Absolutely. But the problem is that the Commitment to the Future of Medicare Act, which is called Bill 8, prohibits that.
So in other words, because of McGuinty's ideology, that is not a possibility.
You cannot,
he has said he will not do that, even though that would be a short-term solution.
Yeah,
and a viable one that could turn into a long-term solution.
In fact, as I mentioned, to save family practice, if the government is admitting it cannot afford the model it wants us to provide, and I want to be clear about that. This is the model that they wanted us to do.
Right. For how many years?
We started this in, we adopted this model 2.5 years ago because they just had introduced these.
Right.
So we adopted this model 2.5 years ago, set up the practice, electronic records, hired more staff, did all the things that we were supposed to do and that we wanted to do because it encouraged better care.
And there was collaboration for the model,
Absolutely.
Wasn't there, between the OMA and the government?
It was working extremely well. And then the rug gets pulled out from under you. The amount that would it take to save our practice, for example, would be $5 per patient per visit when they come in. That would be enough.
You could keep present service going.
You could get present service going at that level. Yeah, $5, 10 at the max.
And that seems like such a simple solution. But ideology, liberal ideology, is saying, no, that's not going to happen.
And I'm talking about family practice only. I'm not going to speak for
any other. They'd rather stick to their ideology. They'd rather stick to the ideology and have tens of thousands of people lose their family doctors. They'd rather stick to their ideology and lose the family doctors than offer a simple solution like user
fees. And again, that $5 is not for the doctor to pocket.
Of course not.
That $5 is to be able to maintain and actually improve the services that we have. And I'll tell you all the time, you know, ask physicians. And what we would do is we would say, okay, look, we've got this amount of money. What equipment do we want to get? So one of them was, why don't we get what's called a pulse oximeter? A pulse oximeter is that little thing that hangs on your finger with a red light on it that tells us how much oxygen someone has in their blood. Important when you have a child coming in who has asthma, they're not breathing, someone who has chronic obstructive lung disease. And you want to know, does this person have to go to the hospital or not? If their oxygen saturation is over 92%, which is normal, you go, fantastic. So we bought one, right? Each of these things that gets added in, lung function tests, liquid nitrogen treatments, all kinds of stuff that you add in, you do that because you want a one-stop area. You want to provide that to your patient. And you can't do that with what they're going to do to us. We cannot do that and maintain that.
Let's go to Colette in Ottawa. Hi, Colette.
Hi, Dr. Dworkin.
Hi.
I'm just wondering, I am so fed up with the McGuinty government. I mean, the e-health, the orange, the green energy, the FIT program, the kindergarten babysitting. I just wonder, what can we do as the general public at this point to help the doctors?
And it's only the general public that can do anything, Colette, because they don't have a union. Ontario Medical Association is just that's their collection of, they get together and agree on things, but they have no power to go on strike or anything like that.
I know. So what can we do the general public in order for us to help the doctors so that we as patients do not suffer?
Well, I think people have to express their concern that they're going to lose services, ask the government why they've demonized physicians, why they have decided to treat us poorly in this way. And remember, if they can do this to one group, you can bet they're going to do this to another if nobody says anything. If people just acquiesce and say, it's the doctors, they're greedy, they're et cetera, all the stuff that comes out.
It has nothing to do with that.
Yes, but that's how the government is painting it.
Yes, I know.
And so if they can do that with one group, you can bet the next group that's going to come along is either teachers or somebody else, and they'll continue to do this as long as people don't say anything. If you call them on the carpet and say, why are you treating people this way? Why are you providing misinformation and saying something that is not the case? They're saying they're going to improve. It's 1984, where, the Ministry of Peace is actually the Ministry of War. Well, in this case, they're saying one thing, but really we're improving health care. We're going to make things better, but actually they're making it worse. But they're presenting it in a way, they're saying, well, we're taking money away from here, from the doctors, so that we can provide more home care, when there's other areas that also can provide that service. I'm not saying that we shouldn't be cut. What I'm saying is that the behavior of this government is reprehensible. To isolate and castigate a group of people who have done what they've been asked to do, and then to say that somehow they're bilking the system, that they're taking money out of the system and profiting off of the system, is not honorable behavior.
No, and to top it all off, to add insult to injury, and this is no word of a lie, he advertised on CFRA, Bob Chiarelli said that he would provide doctors to go to do home visits.
Yes, well, that's another interesting thing, because next year they're cutting the fee that gives the physician the coverage to be able to leave their office to go do home care. So that fee goes out the window too.
So support,
it's lies
support.
After lies after lies. I'm getting so fed up.
Call at supportontariodoctors.ca. And I want to get this in as well, okay? We're pounding on McGuinty, but I want to remind people, he wouldn't have a microphone to speak into if it wasn't for people that vote him in, okay?
But voters, we don't vote him in. It's the GTA that votes him in.
Okay, then you can blame the voters in Toronto, okay? It is voters that have enabled this guy, okay? And when it comes right down to it, voters have the hammer here. We can throw this guy out if we want, but we get the government that we deserve, and you've got too many people that are uninformed, and by the time they find out, you know, by losing their family doctor, that's too late. They think, oh, well, what happened? You know, I mean, it blows me away how ill-informed and how dumb voters can be, particularly when it comes to issues like this.
I know. I mean, I keep abreast of everything.
Colette,
but I know there's a lot of families, young families. They're just too busy.
Colette, you said the GTA. May I remind people, it's Ottawa South that, you know, is McGuinty's home riding here, okay?
Yeah,
this
you're
is
right.
The kind of health system that Ottawa South wants.
You're right.
How else can we interpret any other way?
So
this is what
who?
They want. This is what Ottawa South wants. I want to remind people of that, okay? It's fair to demonize Dalton McGuinty, but the fact is he wouldn't have a microphone to speak into if it wasn't for Ottawa South. Thank you very much.
When it's his that election's coming up. Soon,
well,
it?
No, it's. I think it's two. It's at least no. It's they've got a virtual majority right now. We may not have an election for another 4 years.
No, I mean not the provincial, but I mean his writing.
No. It comes up with a provincial election. Call it. Yeah. We gotta go. Yeah. Ontario, yeah. Supportontariodoctors.ca. You can sign a petition there, and you need to write your MPP as well.
Thank you.
The other aspect too, in terms of our practice, and there's other practices in the city that do the same thing, is that we're a teaching center. We have medical students, residents that come by that spend time learning family medicine. We even cover the cost, and because we want our staff to be up to date. We cover the cost for our nurse. We have a nurse that now specializes in diabetes care. We paid for her courses. We pay for our other staff for training in medical issues. So it's, again, the philosophy of the practice and a lot of the family practices out there is to continually educate and improve their care to patients. And that only can happen by being able to fund that. And so the choices that we have are to allow the government to say, we can't afford it, and if you can't, then allow us to do what we need to do by other means.
I'm going to squeeze in one more call. Catherine, you got about 60 seconds.
I was wondering whether the healthcare system in Switzerland and Sweden are for-profit, private for-profit, or private not-for-profit?
I'm not sure if they're for-profit or private non-profit, but frankly, that doesn't matter to me. What matters to me is whether the patient gets adequate care. And if the system is designed so people compete and people make a profit and are encouraged to provide even better care, so be it. There's nothing wrong with making a profit. What is wrong is making a profit and not providing adequate care and cutting costs so that the person suffers. Mm-hmm. But when you have people competing, you don't see in any other endeavor in our society where you have competition, poorer quality of stuff. The ones, the companies and the businesses that survive are the ones that actually provide the services that their customers want. and they are successful in that way.
Catherine, appreciate your call. We're out of time.
We're out of time.
SupportOntarioDoctors.ca, folks. If you don't write your MP, if you don't write the Minister of Health, at least go there and find out what some of your courses of action are. And the only way this is going to be delayed or stopped or changed, the only way is if there's a public outcry. There's no doctors union or anything like that. And the province is up the yin-yang with debt of their own doing. And it's your government. That's who you wanted. And if you didn't vote for them, well, then I guess we got to yell and scream a little bit more, don't we? Barry, thanks for coming in and doing this.
My pleasure.
You got to be in the office tomorrow.
I have to be in the office
tomorrow. CTV News is next. Thanks for tuning in.